Okay, this is Moses Allison, and you're listening to Radio 8 Ball with Andras Jones.
And we're back for more Radio 8 Ball with Jimmy Webb, who's going to be at Jazz Alley this Tuesday and Wednesday. Jimmy, are you playing solo or with a band?
It's just me and the piano.
Oh, fantastic. Now we're going
to
be joined.
That remains to be seen, but
I have no doubt. So now we're going to be joined by a longtime friend and collaborator of mine and of the show. Chris Sand is the subject of his own documentary, Rollout Cowboy, and the author of more songs than I or probably even he can count. He's been mixing country, folk, hip-hop, pop, and his own brand of cowboy poetry since the early 90s, and he's still pumping out the hits today. Welcome to Radio 8 Ball with Jimmy Webb, Sandman.
Hey, thanks for that, and what an honor, Mr. Webb, to be here.
Hey, thank you, man.
Here.
Same here.
Yeah.
It's you're an incredibly interesting person.
Well, thanks.
So we're going to find out how interesting here. Chris, what's your question for the Pop Oracle?
Well, you know, so I'm going through a divorce this week, and but really the separation happened in 2014. And so I was talking to some friends, and they were telling me that 2014 was the year of the breakup. I have some theories why maybe it is, but my real question is, if 2014 was the year of the breakup, and I actually Googled it just before, like an hour ago, just to see if that's true, and it is. People are calling it that. What is 2015 going to be?
Okay. And will you pick a number between 1 and 8 that is neither 3 nor 6?
Oh, how about 7?
Okay, song number 7.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride. With sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her bubbles to my tree. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25. But I am still alive. I was a sailor. Yards broke out.
That was actually Sandman's own track answering Sandman's question. If 2014 was the year of the breakup, then what is 2015? That was Sandman's version of Jimmy Webb's The Highwayman featuring Calvin Johnson, indie rock legend Calvin Johnson on the final vocal, Sandman on the third vocal, Giles O'Dell, the producer of the track, on the second vocal, and yours truly. I sing the first, the Willie Nelson part, and was very honored to be invited to be a part of that. So,
wow.
I'm not going to ask you if you've heard that version. You probably haven't heard that version before, Jamie.
No. It was a trip. It was like very, very cool to listen to something really fresh, you know.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that song.
By the way, guys, there's no chance The Fix was in here, right?
No, that was purely, I mean, I didn't tell anyone the song number. I'm very surprised by the numbers that you were picking, very obscure numbers. I don't want to say which ones are usually obvious, but 3 and 6 and 7, not obvious.
All right, I'm going to take your word for it, but I was hanging out talking about Nielsen before, and I was in London all the time that he was working on Nielsen Schmielsen, and that was kind of like our place to go party down, the two of us, and so we were starting in, like, I don't know, probably around 71, and then we would be over there once or twice a year. He finally got an apartment in Curzon Street where Keith Moon died. Actually, Mama Cass died as well, and then he sold the place, you know. But some really crazy stuff happened over there. I remember one night that he came over to the Inn on the Park, which is where I always stayed, and we were staying up and drinking a little bit and kind of arguing about music. You know, we always had, you know, some opposing views about things, you know, which was good, really good, all good. And I remember that night, for some weird reason, you know, it was like he had started crying, and I asked him what was the matter, and this guy was like iron. He never broke, you know. And he said, told me that his mother was terminally ill, and he left. And I went to bed on that, you know. Mm. And I woke up early in the morning in this dream that was really still in the room with me. You know, if you know that feeling where you're awake and it's really time for the dream thing to be over, but it's still hanging around while you're trying to sort of sort yourself out. And it was about being a highwayman, you know, like an outlaw. And, you know, in England, there was a famous English outlaw named Dick Turpin, you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all kinds of English literature about highwaymen. And in the dream, I was one of those guys, and it was so vivid. And I was being chased along the road by these soldiers, and I knew that if these guys caught me, that was ass over tea kettle, you know, I was going to end up hanging from a tree. And I had a piano in my room, guys, honest to God. And I woke up about 5 in the morning, walked over to the piano, and started writing Highwayman. I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads, I did ride with sword and pistol by my side, you know. And after I got the first verse, I realized that this somehow it was just it was like synchronicity again, but it was like this spiritual idea that was the answer. It was also the answer to the song, to writing the song. It was like the key, or it was like the DNA for writing the song, was that this guy, he kept going. He didn't just stop at being a highwayman. And I was thinking about Harry's mom, you know, and the fact that there has to be more than just a black curtain, you know. There has to be more. And I'm not talking religion or anything here, really. I'm not a very religious guy. I think I'm pretty spiritual, but I'm not at all religious. It caused me to pursue this guy's life through another three incarnations, you know. And then if you do a quick cut, and it's 8 years later, and Johnny Cash is ill, pretty ill, and calls Willie and Waylon and Chris Christopherson in to help him finish an album that he had promised, I believe it was RCA. And so these guys came in to help because he really wasn't in top form. And Glenn Campbell went into the studio with those guys one night and played Highwayman for them 8 years later. And it was four verses, and it was one verse for each guy. It was like, it was just like slipping your hand into a glove.
That is and perfect.
I got a Grammy for it, for Best Country Song. When I told Waylon that I'd gotten a Grammy for Best Country Song, Waylon said, "Which country is that?" So it's a pretty, yeah, it's kind of a, it's a pretty good story that goes along with it, you know?
Okay.
But honestly, man, I can truly say that was a dream track. That was like coming right out of REM sleep and having this just, you know, so terrifying. I mean, a real screecher of a dream. It was really scary.
Well, let's take this over to Sandman. Chris, what did you think about that as the answer to your question?
Yeah, I'm afraid for the answer, huh? Well, first, yeah.
Maybe it's like love is reincarnated.
Go on, Sandman.
I thought of that, too. First of all, it's just kind of blowing my mind. I can't even put it into words, but just the merging of the veils, they just opened for a second. So that was the most profound part for me, is just that song got chosen at all. Because I'm heading down to Mont Eagle, Tennessee to go to the songwriters retreat. But you know who Kim Williams is by any chance?
Not offhand. I'm sorry.
She wrote a bunch of songs for on Garth Brooks' first couple of records. That's what.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I knew it was a familiar name.
And his daughter Amanda. Yeah. Amanda, who's the redhead he sings about in one of the songs. She leads this thing. She's a friend, and so I'm kind of putting myself out for the first time ever, going to this retreat down there, and so my goal is to meet songwriters and to figure out how to write a hit song.
You've already written so many hits, Sandman. They can learn from you.
Yeah, but you know, that's one part of it, is getting those songs out. But the other part is making the connections. And the other synchronicity here is that I just pulled into Denver as I have a show in about an hour. So I had to pull into Denver.
Oh, far out.
It isn't quite Boulder, but it's still close. And it's Colorado. And that was the verse I sang.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So But yeah, I guess I would say the same thing you said was it's kind of starting over. You know, I died. I actually went to last year was so hard. I went to the people who read stars.
An astrologer?
Astrologer. And she told me, she said 2014 was like, I die in like four major ways, but that in February, March of 2015, all these things kind of come. She never seen such an interesting chart.
Wait, she said you died in four different ways?
Four major ways, yeah.
Well, that's the song. Is literally the song. It's about.
That is the song. Yeah.
So that's you know, we can scoff as much as we want to at astrology if you must, but but I think she nailed this one. I think she nailed the pop oracle at least, or at least the pop oracle and astrologer. Pop oracles and astrologers agree. You had four dates last year, and it's time for you know, the song ends with him shooting off into the stars. So we've been waiting for that to happen for a while. Those of us who have been fans of yours for going on decades now. So let it be so.
Let it be so. And she also said, enjoy 2014 because it'll be the first, because it'll be for the next 17 years, I'm not going to be able to really enjoy peace much because I'm going to be all over the world. She said, I've never been outside of the continent. So that's
you're going to be too busy to enjoy.
That's what she said. So enjoy it. I don't know if I want that, but.
Well, you don't know this, Sandman, but that was kind of the theme of the last question. So the whole show is sort of, as Radio 8 Ball shows do, is sort of coalescing around several different themes. And that was another exciting segment of Radio 8 Ball. In our next and final segment, we're going to be joined by Julie Christensen to ask her question to the Pop Oracle and Jimmy Webb.
Hey, this is Bobby Hill, and you're listening to Radio 8 Ball with Andras Jones. I said good day, Sheriff.
If you would like to hear our podcasts, find out info about the Radio 8 Ball live events, commune with the online oracle, or communicate with the Radio 8 Ball team, please take a moment to visit the Radio 8 Ball website at www.radio8ball.com. Give us a shake.
You're listening to Radio 8 Ball with Jimmy Webb. Jimmy, what do you think about this format?
Well, you know, I got to tell you something. Like, at first, I was a little, skeptical, I guess. But we've had, like, about, you know, three solid hits here.
Yeah, I think so. It's okay to start out skeptical.
I'm pretty impressed right now.
I'm glad.
I'm sort of there's something obvious. There's some sort of energy happening. Maybe it's spiritual. It's just the spiritual nature of music that connects artists. You know, I'm trying to think of some logical reason for it, but maybe there doesn't have to be a logical reason for it.
Well, we're going to just keep on rolling the 8 ball, and if some logic emerges, we'll enjoy it, and if it doesn't, we'll enjoy it anyway. So for this next segment, I have the pleasure of introducing a woman whose voice has been my traveling companion since I was just a pup. Julie Christensen is blessed with a voice so good it hurts. She sung with Iggy Pop, Public Image LTD, Todd Rundgren, John Doe, Xene Cervenka, K.D. Lang, and probably most famously with Leonard Cohen during his I'm Your Man period. She even sang with my band, The Previous, for a while back in the 90s. Julie is an accomplished singer-songwriter and band leader in her own right, currently plying her trade in East Nashville. Welcome to Radio 8 Ball, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me on, Gus.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Actually, your song, just like Jimmy Webb's song from your record, came up as the second answer in the show already. So.
Oh, good.
Jimmy got a chance to hear it. It was, I guess, his first listening to the song.
Well, I think I'd heard it before or part of it before, but there's something about this format where you're kind of sitting on the phone and you really have to listen. And I was really focused on the arrangement, and all of a sudden it was just apparent that there was so much tender, loving care in the song that I squeezed out a couple of tears, you know.
Aww.
It was
that
just
makes me
so
proud.
Obvious that it was so obvious that you had treated the material with some real affection, and
I loved it from the minute I heard it.
That doesn't always happen, so I was really enchanted with the whole thing.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Thank you. It's one of my little overlooked babies, you know?
Yeah, I think so, too.
Julie, so what is your question here for the Pop Oracle through the music of Jimmy Webb?
Well, I struggled with this. I really wanted to come up with something that I'm really feeling deeply about, and I think it's maybe a common question for a lot of people, so... even if it seems general, this is what it is. My story has a lot of emotional pain and some physical pain in it. And I want to ask the Pop Oracle if I'm going to be able to write the last third or so of my story with a lot more healing and unconditional love and light.
Healing.
Wow.
Love and light. Okay, and
it's a worthy question.
It's a great question. Now, would you pick a number between 1 and 8 that is not 3, nor 6, nor 7?
8. On behalf of my husband, because that's his lucky number.
Song number 8 from Jimmy Webb.
When moonrise wanders down the road and asks me if I want. By my side, but you know I'm the same. I've heard all of your lines, all false promises, all illusions, all delusions. I demand my right to stay. Now you can go out in the hall, and you can write that on the wall. Oh, yes, once before. This summer when it rains, I may not sleep before my clothes have dried, but you know I'm the same. I may not yet have lived, or I may have already died, but you know I'm the same. Write that on the wall.
That was Jimmy Webb with Once Before I Die, the answer to Julie Christensen's question, will I be able to write the third act of my life in healing, love, and light? Once again.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Perfect answer. And I can't even, I wish I could tell you, the whole process for picking the songs that were going to be chosen, I had a whole random process. And both that one and Just Like Marilyn were actually chosen, maybe even before songs that I would have thought would be more indicative of Jimmy's stuff. But I'm so glad that both, that I mean, the pop oracle, the random knows way better than the conscious choice. So,
well, that's a song I'm not familiar with, and it blew my mind. Because, Jimmy, you blow my mind pretty consistently.
Well, That's way back again to my very first record, which we were talking about earlier, and I was saying that it always sounded thin to me. It was just me and Freddie Tackett, who's now in the Little Feet Band, and that's my sister Susan singing with me.
Aww.
And I used to kind of compare it to George Martin's, you know, productions, the things that. Almost anything that came out of London, you know, it was so big and fat, and it was like, how do they do that? And I just have a kind of negative impression of this record, but that sounded pretty good.
Yeah, it sounded good.
I mean, we loved working out the parts, you know, because we grew up in a Southern Baptist Church, so you know we were pretty good three-part singers.
Yeah.
My sister and I.
Oh, it sounds great, man.
I remember like one reviewer talking about that, and he says I'm gonna be so free, and I think it was one of those like really really hip guys from Rolling Stone, and he said that song was like my version of Sammy Davis's I've Got to Be Me. And I thought, well, okay, fair enough, you know, but I never meant anything any more in my life.
Yeah.
than the chorus of that song, you know, I mean, it's like where I was, you know, I mean, I listened to the verse and I go, you know, I'd like to have another chance at writing the verses.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, that song, it's the closing song on that record. And this is the thing I love about, I think everyone, I'm not alone in saying this, there's something about first records that people just, songwriters, especially if they're good, they just come out swinging for the fences. And that whole record does have that real, a tremendous sense of urgency.
And I
highly recommend it to anyone who thinks that they know the singer-songwriter genre of the 70s. I was not aware of this record before this last 2 weeks, and it is really
well,
one of my new favorites.
I have to speak it out now because I was in the generation that came to Jimmy Webb via Glenn Campbell and Fifth Dimension, and you know, and my 45 of what's his name?
P.S.
Sporting Life.
Oh.
Doing MacArthur
Richard
Park.
Harris.
Oh,
Richard
yes.
Harris, man. I was so in love with Richard Harris, and I wore that
and
record
why
out.
Why not?
Yeah, why not, man? He was hot.
I was in love with him myself. Yeah, I'm definitely hetero, you know.
Yeah, but he was a man's man.
Yeah, he was. He was like a big brother to me. He was such a naughty guy. He taught me some really, really bad things.
Well, he stole the hell out of that song, man.
He was always a lot of fun, you know.
I mean that in a good way.
He really was. I talk about him quite a bit in my show because I don't know. It's just one of those relationships where, you know, back in the day, I'd have a couple of beers, and I'd say, you know, Julie, we ought to go make a record, you know? And most of the time, I got away with it. You know, I mean, I even said to President Clinton one time, let's go make a record, you know? I got away with it until I met Richard. And then I said to him one night, we had a bunch of Guinness, and we're hugging, and we're kissing, and we're singing Irish songs. And I said, you know, Richard, we ought to make a record. And like about a month later, I got a telegram from London said, dear Jimmy Webb, come to London, make record. Love Richard. And I was...
I did buy that LP recently. I think I got
stuck
it in a thrift store. Yeah.
You know, and it turned out to be just like a fantastic thing, you know.
Oh,
talk
yeah.
about, you know, sometimes the moving hand writes something more fantastic than we could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Well, and bringing it back to this song and to Julie's question, you know, I just thought, well, this is an overwhelmingly positive answer. If you're saying that there is a pain or there have been things that have been keeping you from feeling free, the song is just a beautiful expression of the freedom that awaits you in this third chapter.
Yeah. Wow, I'm really looking forward to it. You know,
I would say that was I gotta admit, man, that this thing seems to be working.
Something's going on.
Yeah, and again,
this is like our fourth, you know, solid hit. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. You know, there were some songs that were in there that I really thought, okay, well, this is, you know, if I was going to program the perfect Jimmy Webb show, I've got four other songs with you that are more of maybe more familiar hits or, you know, just.
Well, these were really kind of off the beaten path.
Yeah. Well, I never argue with the Pop Oracle. It always chooses the right songs. It always chooses the right songs.
Well, I was often fond of telling people, you know, you got to hear this song that I'm doing of Jimmy Webb. It's like a Wichita lineman for girl singers. I said, you know, it's like it's this great, great song that you've never heard, and I just really want to bring it to you. You know, I really want you to hear it. You know, and so. I think it's great that you got four more obscure songs, you know, on this program for people to hear, you know?
Well, it's fitting. I started the show off asking a question about Carole Kaye. We ended up getting P.F. Sloan as the answer to that. And so since then, we've just gone down the obscure
highway.
Rabbit hole. But that's great. This is one of my favorite things about doing this show. Is and I hope you are enjoying this too, Jimmy. That we're not. I hope we've avoided asking most of the obvious questions.
I had a great time. You know, I have to tell you, it's really been enjoyable. I don't have to tell you. I do tell you that. It's really been an enjoyable evening for me because, to be honest, I kind of, you know, I don't want to be too harsh here, but there's a certain burnout factor in talking about by the time I get to Phoenix over and over again.
Yep.
And it's not, you know, I mean, my heart's still in it, and I appreciate the fact that people are still interested. Believe me, I do. I mean, how could I not? After all these years, it's such a surprise to me in a way that something like Wichita Lineman is still interesting enough that people want to talk about it. But it's a well-plowed field for me, you know. And to be able to talk about some of the songs that really perked my ears up, you know, when I heard Just Like Marilyn, because some of my favorite lyrics that I've ever wrote are in that song. And it's really dedicated to that whole world of performers out there who sort of almost make it.
Yeah.
And who may very well have just as much talent, and sometimes more talent, than the ones that we that are lucky enough to have a hit, and then lucky enough to have maybe the right manager. I mean, if you want to take it one step further, since we're talking about the pop oracle, what about the day the record was cut? What was the temperature?
Yeah.
Was the drummer in a good mood or a bad mood when he came through the door to make that record?
Well,
when that record was finished, was the record company enthusiastic about it, or were they just kind of had something else a little bit hotter that they were dealing with, and this one just kind of slipped through the cracks? And you can go on and on and on, and you come up with an algorithm for a hit record that's it's a virtually unmanageable number of odds against any given record being a hit.
Right.
The odds are just astronomical.
Yeah.
That it will happen to, you know, fit through all the square holes and all the round holes and somehow or other come out at the end being a part of culture because it's been exposed. And then there's this whole world of art that it just falls in a less fortunate category, if you understand what I mean.
Absolutely. And that,
because I've heard so much good stuff in my life and encouraged people and prayed for people, you know, let this guy have a hit, you know. So it's really a quirky thing when, you know, success stalks you down and finds you. I mean, it's something to be exceedingly grateful for.
Speaking of which, we are incredibly grateful to have had you on this show, Jimmy. This last couple of weeks of realizing how much your music has influenced me without me being aware of it, and now being able to immerse myself in it, has been an incredible treat. To anyone who's a songwriter, I highly recommend your book, Tunesmith. I wish I had read it 20 years ago.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
I've been learning a lot from it and having some wonderful conversations in my head with it. And one of my favorite things about this show is being able to introduce some of the artists who are like the Just Like Marilyn in your song, the people. Like, well, I guess I include myself, but Sandman and Lisa and Julie Christensen, artists who have devoted our lives to playing music.
Great group tonight.
And to be able to share it with a real professor in this art that we have devoted our lives to, it's just, it's really, really fantastic. I want to encourage everyone who's listening to this, if you hear this before the 10th and 11th of February 2015, that you get your tickets to go see Jimmy Webb perform these a lot of these songs and others at Jazz Alley in Seattle. And I'm going to leave the last word to you, Jimmy.
Well, I just want to thank Julie for showing up and for recording that beautiful version of Just Like Marilyn, and And I want to tell you how grateful I am for being invited, because it was a really, really wonderful evening that kind of evokes, you know, the days of the salon, you know, when people would gather in the evening and share intellectual and musical ideas. You know, it's an old idea that's, you know, definitely has it's got more life in it, and you've brought life to it. I think that's a beautiful thing.
And that brings to a close this episode of Radio 8 Ball. I'd like to thank our guest, Jimmy Webb, for being a part of this broadcast. Also, Lisa Genio, Chris Sand, and Julie Christensen for asking such great questions. Also, the fabulous folks at Jazz Alley for bringing Jimmy Webb to town so we could have him on our show. And my favorite radio producer, Eric Ryder, for his behind-the-scenes wizardry. I don't know when we'll be doing another one of these, but you can look forward to lots more best-of episodes at our website. And please, if you like what we do, go to our Patreon campaign and become a monthly subscriber to Radio 8 Ball. The link is below this podcast. Until next time, I'm your host, Andras Jones, wishing you lots of spine-tingling synchronicities, connections with the natural world, and all the inspiration you can handle.